In its quest to provide an open forum for discussion of controversial issues, this station allows hosts and their guests to express themselves without any significant censorship. You're advised that any views expressed by the hosts or their guests are not necessarily the views of Tug Entertainment or its partners.
Welcome to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com. And hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com and 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Officer Radio is your source for the latest news, trends, and issues facing the law enforcement community. Join us each week as Officer Borelli and his guest examine, dissect, and discuss the issues facing our industry. Call in live and join the conversation to get your voice heard. Now, let's get to it. It's Officer Radio, live with Frank Borelli on Officer.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to Officer Radio on Officer.com. I'm your host, editor for Officer.com, Frank Borelli. Today, we will be talking about a couple of things. The first that I'm going to talk about in this opening segment is spring cleaning. And the second that we'll talk about throughout the remainder of the show is the need for law enforcement to have first aid training, quote unquote, beyond the Band-Aid, as it's said by our guest, Mr. Paul Markle. Paul's a nationally recognized speaker and trainer, as well as being the host of the television show Student of the Gun and the author of the book by the same title, Student of the Gun. The spring cleaning topic won't be nearly as involved and interesting, but it's a topic we definitely need to discuss and deal with. Throughout the show today, we'll be taking calls from listeners. The number to dial is 866-404-6519. That's 866-404-6519. If you have a comment, question, observation, or other thought to share, please don't hesitate to dial us up. Excuse me. If for any reason you're uncomfortable calling, I don't know what to tell you. Send me an email. We'll deal with it next show, or I'll email you back. I don't check email during the show anymore. It causes technical difficulties at times just due to connectivity issues. So give me a call, 866-404-6519. Today's show, like all of them, will be archived on the Officer.com radio page as well as our podcast page. I'm not going to tell you how to find the radio page because if you're listening to the show live, you're on it. The podcast page, if you look up to the top of the page, web page that you're looking at, the navigation bar podcast is right next to radio. That's where our podcasts are archived. All of the shows are also available on iTunes. However, iTunes lists them by date, not by topic. So come to the podcast page, find the date and the topic that you want, then go to iTunes and download the material by date. As you hopefully well know, Officer.com has both a Facebook fan page and a Twitter feed. Any updates we plan for the radio show, schedule guests, etc., get posted on both. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We do tend to retweet anything applicable to the law enforcement community. Not only do we appreciate the interaction, but it allows us to serve your information needs better. So do follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. Our numbers have grown significantly on both, and we're proud of that fact. A little bit more than 5,100 folks following us on Twitter now, and more than 17,500 Facebook fans. So you're not in bad company, but there's a lot of us out there that aren't on either one. With about 750,000 cops in this country today, I'd be delighted, and it would sure give me some job security as well, if that Facebook fan page had 700,000 people that liked it. That would make my day no end, y'all. That'd be great. On Twitter feed, same thing. You know, 750,000 cops. Now, I know we don't all use Twitter. Not all of us are technologically savvy. They've had to drag me into the 21st century, I'd say by my hair, but I don't have much. We've all got to get with it eventually. So like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. You get the news feeds on Twitter as well in a timely fashion that are law enforcement specific. Now, let's spend a few minutes talking about this spring cleaning stuff. Way back in the middle of February, a month ago today, in fact, February 15th, I wrote a blog called Spring Cleaning. And in that, I described how every spring, depending on when the flowers bloom or when the weather gets warm enough, essentially, at some point, my spousal unit, my spousal unit decides it's time for us to do the spring cleaning around the house. We as law enforcement officers need to do the same thing with our cruisers, our offices, and our gear. All right. So And it's necessary. We might not think it is, but, you know, we do an awful lot on the street, and we do it very quickly. We have to go from A to B to C to D to M to Z back to B, and we have to remember where we were and where everything is and what we need and how to get to it and all that stuff. And through the course of the year, you grab something out of your trunk, you throw it back in there, you know you're going to put it where it needs to be later. Later never comes. You are having a really, really rough night because there's 2 feet of snow on the ground and you're living on caffeine and sugar, and the empty coffee cups are piling up on the passenger side floorboard, and you clean them all out at the end of the shift, but you miss the two that rolled underneath the seat. They're still there growing a science project months later. You transport the prisoner if you got a cage car in the back. And you don't realize this guy's drooled because that's quiet. So if he spit, you would hear it. If he did something else nasty, you'd hear it. But he either pees on himself or he drools all over your back seat. Now, if he pees, you smell it, so you know what's going on. Drool, not so much, but it dries and it cakes and it's yucky. We have to clean out our cars. If you have an assigned patrol vehicle, no matter what it is, if it's a motorcycle, you got to clean out the saddlebags in the trunk. If it's a police car, you got to clean out the passenger compartment and the trunk. If it's an SUV, you've got to clean everything interiorly. You have to go through it all, not only clean it, but organize it. Pull out every item that's in there. Literally empty it out. And a couple of things. Number one, make sure that what you're putting back, you need. Number two, because you need it, it's vitally important that it's serviceable. So if it's a fire extinguisher, as an example, make sure it's not expired and doesn't need to be recharged. If it's a first aid kit and you think, yeah, they're good forever, you'd be surprised. Some manufacturers of Band-Aids, since we're going to be talking about first aid in a little bit anyway, they expire. They're no good. The sticky stuff wears out or whatever. You can't get the package open. Some antibacterial products. We used to have something called Alcare. It was great. It was a foam that had an alcohol base in it. But that stuff, after a while, becomes nothing but clear liquid, and they might as well be pouring rubbing alcohol on your hands. To do antibacterial cleansing of your hands. This stuff all has got to be checked. Check your expiration dates. Make sure the stuff is still serviceable. What did you use in the previous year since the last time you did spring cleaning on your car that needs to be replaced? Make sure that gets replaced. Make sure you know where everything is and put it in some kind of prioritized fashion. If you need your first aid kit, you need your first aid kit fast. You don't need to try to figure out if it's underneath of the rifle case or over here behind your spare tire. Or is it maybe someplace else? You can't have all that. Oh, forgive me. You got to know where this stuff is, and you got to be able to get to it quick. Where's your active shooter response bag? If you get dispatched to an active shooter call, you've got to pop your trunk, pull on your vest, grab your rifle, put on your helmet, and go. Where is it all? Is it where you can get to it relatively quickly and easily? When was the last time you cleaned the rifle? When was the last time you took the ammo out of the magazines? Spring cleaning, y'all. We got to do it. We've got to make sure our equipment is serviceable, is where we can get to it, and we need to know where it's at. Just like you know, need to know by touch where everything is on your gun belt, you need to know almost instinctively where everything is in your trunk. If you have to open your trunk and pull out 6 items to get to your first aid kit or your fire extinguisher, you'd better know that going in so you're not just doing the random needle in a haystack search trying to find what you're looking for. Vitally important. Now, along with that, I was just at the range yesterday. For those of you all who don't know, I still work in law enforcement. I'm still a trainer here in my home state, and one of the things I do is firearms training. So last 2 days, I've spent at the range with members of a local police department, and they needed to qualify. One of the first things I asked them in the classroom – prior to going out on the range, when was the last time you cleaned your gun? It was kind of funny. The people who were 20-year veterans said last night. They knew they were coming to the range. They cleaned their gun. When was the last time before that? When they finished at the range qualifying last time, which for them was 3 months ago. So their gun's getting cleaned every 3 months before and after going to the range. The younger ones... one guy said, well, I cleaned it 5 months ago. Did you clean it before you went to the range 3 months ago? No. Did you clean it when you were done at the range 3 months ago? No. At least he was being honest, but he had a filthy gun. And because he carried it concealed through the winter, he had all kinds of nice sweatshirt lint built up in there. And, Yeah, he needed to clean it before he even went on the range. It didn't have any lubrication on it at all. It needed help. We got to pay attention to our equipment. If we don't take care of it, it won't take care of us. Y'all have heard that time and time again. Spring cleaning. You're cleaning out your car. Cleaning out your patrol vehicle. Taking care of your first aid kit. Taking care of your fire extinguisher. Taking care of your spare flashlight. Replacing batteries that you've got in anything that's in there. Clean your weapons. Clean your handgun. Strip it as far as your training and experience and knowledge will permit you to do it, and thoroughly clean it. Lubricate it as necessary. Reassemble it. Do a good function test on it. Take every round you've got out of the magazines and clean your magazines. I know a ton of people never, ever clean their magazines. I know it's a pain in the rear end. I don't like doing it either. Clean the magazines. Gun's no good if the magazines won't feed bullets into it, folks. Clean your magazines. If you got a rifle, shotgun, whatever you've got, your tools, your weapons, you need to make sure they're clean. Properly lubricated, properly loaded, ready to go. Now, is it just that? No. Tasers, got to be checked. When was the last time you did a float test on your OC canister? Got to do it. Find out where you stand. When was the last time you cleaned your knife? Oiled it? Sharpened it? Do you have more than one? Do you know where they are? If you've got a knife floating around in your car someplace, you better know where it is so nobody can get their hands on it but you. I know one agency that requires their officers to keep their quote-unquote rescue tool in the dashboard glove compartment. That's the only knife they're allowed to carry, a rescue tool, and it's issued to them. Never mind the fact that it's a folding lock blade knife. Everything refers to it as a rescue tool. They specify where it has to be kept. Make sure you maintain it. That's my point. Got to keep it clean. Got to keep it sharp. Few things less, an unloaded gun and a dull knife, both about equally useless in my world. Spring cleaning has to be done. We don't have to like it. We just have to do it. Spring starts in a week. All right, we're coming up on our first break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mr. Paul Markle. We're going to talk about Beyond the Band-Aid, first aid and treatment for common killers of police officers, the wounds that kill us, the wounds that we can treat and save lives. That's what we're going to be talking about with Mr. Paul Markle. Pay attention. Make sure you come back and get the podcast. It's excellent information to have. Stay with us. This is Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. In May of 2011, a small brown-eyed boy proudly showed off the law enforcement buttons he had pinned to his shirt in honor of his dad, an officer killed in the line of duty 6 years ago. Then the reality set in. This boy was just a few days away from his sixth birthday. He never got the chance to meet his dad, nor did thousands of children whose parents' names are forever etched into the living memorial in Judiciary Square. Join us in 2012 as we launch Officer World Expo in Washington, D.C. in our effort to reduce the intolerably large number of officers who didn't get to go home to their families. OfficerWorldExpo.com, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Information about book publishing is power. The power to change your authoring life and the power to change the lives of your readers. So join us for Your Guide to Book Publishing. Everything you want to know but didn't know what to ask. With your host, Dr. Judith Bryles. Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific on the Rockstar Radio Network. We'll hear about statistics, scenarios, and strategies on what to do now. As the book shepherd, Dr. Judith Bryles is in. And each week, she will include publishing professionals that will reveal tips and secrets to the author's journey. If there is a book in you, you want to listen, learn, and yes, call in with your questions each week. For more on Judith and what she can do for you, check out her website, thebookshepherd.com. It's Your Guide to Book Publishing. Everything you want to know but didn't know what to ask. Brought to you by AuthorU and The Book Shepherd. With your host, Dr. Judith Bryles. Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on the Rockstar Radio Network. Welcome back to Officer Radio. powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com, and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Morelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. This is Frank Borelli on Officer Radio here at Officer.com. We are joined now for the remainder of the show by Mr. Paul Markle, and we're going to talk about, quote unquote, beyond the Band-Aid. And this is a term that Paul has coined to talk about the first aid, the trauma care, depending on what kind of treatment you're talking about, the term you would use, the stuff that we can do to save some lives. And that's what it's all about, folks. We got to get more of us coming home alive at the end of the day. So, Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Frank. I really appreciate it.
Boy, there was a pause there. I was like, uh-oh, is Paul there? I was worried.
I am here.
Cool. Before we get into the ugly realities of trauma care, I have to tell you, it's almost 80 degrees and sunny here in the mid-Atlantic coast. I know you're down a little bit in the southern way. Are y'all cooking down there yet or what?
Well, I'm a lot in the southern way. I'm in Biloxi, and it doesn't get too much farther south than this.
So are you cooking or what?
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. It's about 78 degrees right now with a little bit of breeze coming off the ocean.
That is exactly what I've got, except my breeze is coming off the Chesapeake Bay. Now, here we are having a beautiful day, gorgeous sun, nice temperatures, lovely spring day, and we're working the street, and I get shot in the thigh. I can tell you right now, in my last patrol vehicle, the only tourniquet, the only pressure bandage, the only thing in there beyond the first aid kit with the ibuprofen and the Band-Aids was what I put in there. And I know this is a pet peeve of yours, so that's why I put it out there like that. Everything can go to hell in a handbasket pretty fast, and we need to be able to take care of it. What are we doing wrong? And now I've set the soapbox up, step up and start proclaiming Reverend Markle. And I'm not making fun of you, dude. It needs to be said.
No. And you're absolutely right. And Frank, if it's one thing that we've gained, if we've garnered from the current global war on terrorism, it's how to take care of our troops and how to bring more and more of them home alive. And, you know, we see these statistics about these wounded veterans or crippled veterans versus dead ones. Well, yeah, the fact of the matter is we're saving more lives. A lot of these guys, 20, 30 years ago, they would have been mortal casualties, and they just would have died. And but they're here today, and you know, they like to, you know, the people on the other side of the aisle like to point at these amputees and say, see how horrible that is. Well, yeah, it is horrible to a point that, you know, they're missing an arm or a leg. But the fact of the matter is those guys, they would have been in body bags. They would have actually been dead 30 years ago. And, okay, they're missing their left arm or their leg, and that sucks, but they're still alive. And they can go home and they can be with their families alive as rather than just being a memory. And so what we've taught our guys, all the guys going overseas right now into combat zones, know how to, and they teach them what we call TCCC, Tactical Combat Casualty Care. And it's self-aid, buddy aid, professional aid. Now, when I was in the Corps, you know, we relied heavily on the Navy corpsmen. And that's, you know, that's what you do. But the fact of the matter is, if you're in a platoon and there's 30-plus guys, there's one corpsman and you're spread out. And if you're laying over in a ditch bleeding, that corpsman might not be to you for a little while. So what do you do while you're waiting for the corpsman to get you? And your listeners might be saying, well, that's great, Paul, but I'm not in Afghanistan. I'm not in Iraq. I'm not overseas. You know, I patrol every day in, you know, Littleburg, USA. Well, right. Okay, rock on. You get an active shooter or a bank robbery or what, you know, we used to just call them, you know, in-progress calls, and some knuckleheads running around shooting at people, and you catch a bullet or your partner catches a bullet, and you're laying in a parking lot huddled behind a car using it as cover, and there's bright red blood pumping out of your leg. Your leg doesn't care that you're in America and that you're not in the sands of, you know, Iraq. Bleeding to death, you know, on the streets of the United States in Chicago or Detroit or Miami is no different than bleeding to death in Afghanistan or Iraq. It ends up with you being dead.
Right.
And what can you do to stop yourself from dying? And there's three major preventable deaths that we, you know, as dudes, as guys on the street, things that kill us that we can stop. Now, if you take a bullet through the aorta, I'm sorry, bro, I can't help you.
Right.
you know, you get stabbed through the throat, I can't help you. But what I can do is if you get a major bleed to one of your arteries, either in your arms or legs, you get a loss of an airway. How can we open up an airway and maintain an airway? Because you got to have that oxygen. And then the right. last thing, and we don't like to talk about it, but it happens, people get punctured in their lungs. Now, God gave us two lungs for a reason. If one of them has a hole in it, you can live on that other lung. But if your chest fills up with air, your heart doesn't like it when air is pushing on it. That chest right. cavity fills with air. It starts pushing against the heart, and the heart says, hey, I'm not playing this. And you go into, basically you have a heart attack because of that right. pressure. So there's three things that we're teaching our guys right now, in addition to the, you know, the basic CPRs and first aids and so forth, is to treat major bleeds, loss of an airway or how to maintain an airway, and how to relieve a tension pneumothorax. These okay. are things that we're killing dudes.
Let me stop you for a second, because the first one, the major bleeding, is one that I had to get educated about, and I didn't enjoy it while I was doing it. And I learned this new word, exsanguination,
mm-hmm.
which is blood hemorrhaging blood until you die. You bleed to death.
Right.
And I learned this stuff. You're familiar with. I'm sorry.
You don't have enough oxygen to keep your brain conscious.
Right. So I learned that word while I was working on you're very familiar with Blackhawk and their warrior wear and their integrated tourniquet system mm-hmm. line of uniform clothing. I was the guy who was lucky enough to be contacted to do the white paper before they released that product. And I was learning about this stuff with the special operations doctor that they had consulting on the project. And how fast you can bleed out. But what I didn't realize was that, and this was the statistic given to me at the time, in Afghanistan and Iraq, we were losing 2/3 of our casualties to extremity bleeds. In other words, the 2/3 of our casualties, those could have been prevented with proper and timely use of a tourniquet.
Mm-hmm.
66%
exactly right.
of the lives that we could have saved. Now, do we see those same kind of statistics in America with law enforcement, or do you know?
Well, you know, one thing that we're doing, that we always do a really good job of, is protecting our core. I mean, modern body armor is better than it ever has been in any time in our history. And so we do a great job protecting the core, you know, protecting the chest cavity and all that. But what do we have to always have exposed? Well, I mean, you don't go out on patrol, you know, in a bomb suit with Kevlar right. leggings and Kevlar arm guards, you know, you don't. And what you've got there, well, in your legs and your arms, and is, you know, big fat arteries that if they're cut and they start leaking, you got to get those things shut off quick, fast, in a hurry, or you're going to be gone.
What's the time frame?
Yeah, well, for every human being is different because everybody has blood volume, you know, a different blood volume, but the standard is 2 minutes or less. And,
okay.
you know, if you think about it, you say, okay. And, you know, we like to think about the, you know, we talk about the nasty stuff, the, you know, active shooters and so forth. But the truth of the matter is, Frank, how many cops do we lose every year in vehicle crashes?
Oh, way too many.
Right. And you get, and vehicle crashes, you know, quite often, if it's a two-car crash on a highway, you may very well have either a partial or a complete amputation of a limb. And, you know how the box of your car sits? A lot of times when somebody smashes into you, what happens? Your legs get all crunched up and smashed. And so now you've got, you know, your shin bone is laying over 0.90 degrees, and that artery that runs down the, you know, bottom of your leg is open. It's wide open, and it's pumping out blood. Well, you got 2 minutes to bleed to death, to bleed to irreversible shock, and the ambulance will be here in 5 minutes.
That's really I see a discrepancy there that's unacceptable in my world.
Yeah, I mean, people are like, oh, but the ambulance is on the way, and they got a 5-minute response time. And I think you and I both think that, you know, a 5-minute response time for an ambulance is pretty damn good. I mean, it's a good response time. But if you've only got 2 minutes to bleed to death, that doesn't really work for you. And so we have to say to ourselves is, and, you know, we talk about saving ourselves and saving our partners, but I was on the street. Who is always the first guy on scene? It's
me.
You.
Yep.
It's you. It's the patrolman. It's the trooper. It's the sheriff's deputy. Why? Because you're in a car and you're driving around all the time. And the ambulance, you know, he's sitting at the station. They're sitting there and they're waiting for the phone call. You get the call, you know, two vehicle crash. You show up on scene first. There's a 12-year-old kid and he's got his arm amputated, and you've got to stop that kid from bleeding to death. So what can you do? And you say, well, I'll put direct pressure on it. Okay, great. You put both your hands on that arm and you squeeze like nobody's business.
Yeah.
Now you're done.
You're going to slow down the bleeding a little bit.
Yeah, you've effectively become the tourniquet. Okay, now you can't do anything else.
Right.
I mean, you can't make radio calls. You can't assist other people. You can't do anything else because you have to stay there. And I get that a lot when I talk about tourniquets. They're like, oh, that's bull crap. I'll just put direct pressure on it. Okay, fantastic. You put direct pressure on it, and you're there putting the direct pressure on. Now what else do you do? Do you use your radio? You call for help? You direct people in? You direct the ambulance in? No, you can't do it. You're stuck. And, you know, that's something that people don't think about, is that, well, I'll just do that. Okay, great. Now use your radio and go direct the ambulance in. Well, I can't, right. So I let go of the kid's arm. He's going to bleed to death. Bingo.
So I guess, and we're here's our two-minute warning. I love the producer. They give me this two-minute warning, four quarters out of every game. You've got – here we are. We get to the scene. Most of us don't have, at least in my experience, we don't have a tourniquet in our pocket. We don't have a uniform that with pockets that are necessary to carry that kind of stuff. How do we – I mean, if we're carrying it for ourselves or for somebody else, we have to have some kind of common placement. And if I pull up and there's Paul Markle laying on the ground unconscious with a bullet hole and arterial bleed, I need your tourniquet and I need to get it on you quick. Where am I getting it? I mean, is anybody out there standardizing this stuff?
Well, for cops, I really seriously doubt it. I know the military, you know, they put their what they call blowout kits or vented operator kits. They put them on the front so they can get to them with their own hands, or if they're laying there unconscious, all blowed up, their buddies can run over and they can get it. And most units that I've been associated with, they very deliberately set the kits up, you know, exactly so that everybody knows if I grab your kit, it's set up exactly like my kit and I can find everything when I need to. But for cops, good luck.
Okay. When we come back for our first break, then let's talk about what we should be doing different. What should be in that kit and where we should put it, because we're going to our break. He's typing. No, he's erasing in 10 seconds. So when we come back from our break, let's talk about what should be in a kit and where we put it, and then those other two things, the loss or closed airway and tension pneumothorax. This is Officer Radio on Officer.com. Don't go anywhere.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these. Information is power, the power to change your life. So be here for Education to Excellence. Some of the most valuable information you may ever receive will be shared with you 7 p.m. Eastern every Tuesday night with Education to Excellence with your host, Bruce Beichlin. You'll benefit from insightful shows featuring guests that are proven experts in their field. Little-known facts on how to improve your health by making one very simple change in your morning routine. If you're a high school graduate or working adult and a bachelor's, master's, or doctorate degree from an accredited college would change your life, you won't want to miss this. Education to Excellence. Shift your career into high gear without ever attending a traditional college class. Learn investment strategies from proven experts who have a track record of helping normal individuals build abnormal wealth. Check out their website, education2excellence.com. Then join us for the show, Education to Excellence, with your host, Bruce Beichlin, Tuesday nights at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific on toginet.com.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. Join thousands of other law enforcement professionals attending Police Week, May 12th through the 17th, 2012, in Washington, D.C. The new Officer World Expo at Police Week will offer training, conference sessions, and networking opportunities to better equip those who protect others. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Good afternoon, folks. Welcome back to Officer Radio and Officer.com. We're here with Mr. Paul Markle talking about, and I quote, beyond the Band-Aid, the treatment that we've got to be able to give ourselves and our buddies to keep us alive when we have a life-threatening injury. Now, before we went to break, we were talking about trying to standardize a blowout kit, the equipment that you use to stop heavy-duty arterial bleeds. And is there any other kind, I guess? Dave Grossman, in some of his presentations, has said everybody needs to have two pressure bandages, one for the entry wound, one for the exit wound. I firmly believe we all need to have a tourniquet. Paul, what needs to be in the kit, number one?
Okay, well, if you've got a kit, it needs you need to be able to take care of the big three. And the number one of the big three is some type of ready-made tourniquet. And the fact of the matter is, you know, we used to, when we were in the Boy Scouts, you know, when I was in the Corps, when I joined the Marine Corps and was in the infantry in 1987, they would gloss over tourniquets, and they basically said, well, if you absolutely have to, after all other means have failed, blah, 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 make one. You know, use a cravat, use a bandage, and then find a stick. Well, my brother, when the guy laying on the ground in front of you has less than 2 minutes left to bleed to death, the last thing you want to be doing is searching for a stick.
Yeah, you know? Good luck finding that in the desert.
Yeah, hang on, bro. Let me find a stick or a screwdriver or whatever. You're better. I mean, there are so many good tourniquets available to you right now that are ready-made. And, I mean, they're tested. They're approved. The United States Army, which has all the money, really, or most of the money in the military, they do all that testing. And one of the ones that they've recommended is called the CAT, the Combat, I think it's Combat, Action Tourniquet or something, but it's a CAT tourniquet. It's by a company called North American Rescue. And the great thing about the CAT tourniquet is it's flat and it's lightweight and it's easy to store, you know, on your body. And there are several other companies making tourniquets, but the CAT is the number one that the Army recommends. And now the CAT, I'm not sure what the top price on them is, but the fact of the matter is, you know, let's just say it's $35 or something. And I've had people say, oh, $35, man, that's an awful lot for a strap and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, bro, you're bleeding to death. And I walk up to you and say, give me $35 and I will stop you from bleeding to death. Will you give me the $35? Well, duh, of course you will. I mean, people say stuff like that.
I laugh because I remember when people would buy a motorcycle helmet and they'd be like, really, $400 for a helmet? Well, what's your head worth? It's your life.
Your cranium worth, you know, yeah.
Yeah, get the $35 out of your pocket. Damn, this isn't hard. Anyway, yeah. Go on, sorry.
But, get yourself a ready-made tourniquet. Okay, if you got that, then you can go on to, now, how do we maintain an open airway? Now, if the patient's conscious and they're screaming at you, ow, ow, my leg, my arm, that dude's good.
Yep.
He's got an airway because he can't scream at you about the amount of pain he's in if he doesn't have an airway. So the only people that you need to make sure is unconscious patients. You got someone that's laying there, they're unconscious. You might not be able to sit there and monitor them the whole time. Remember we talked about, you know, bringing in the ambulances, dealing with other casualties. Yep. You know, what are you doing? So what we use, I've taught the TCCC to military troops prior to deployment for the last 3 years. And what we teach them is what they call the nose hose or the nasopharyngeal airway. Now, right. All the EMTs out there in the audience are like, oh, bullcrap. We have airways, they're oral airways. But the oral airways, they're all different sizes for different size throats and mouths and kids and toddlers and women and adult men and so forth. Well, the NPA is one size fits all.
Okay, stop a second. Oral airway, also, you have to be trained on how to tube somebody and you have to practice.
Oh, yeah.
And it sucks. Nasal airways are easier. When you say NPA, nasal pharyngeal airway, my only question is, don't they have to be pre-measured to fit the person you're putting it on into?
Nope.
No. Okay.
Yeah, dude, we used the same airways on little 5'2" girls and big giant 6'4" dudes. Some people's nostrils are smaller than others, you know, that's true. And it's not a comfortable thing and it's not fun.
I'm talking about the length, though. I mean, to get it through the sinus cavity, all that stuff.
No, because it's just going down to the back of the back of the throat.
Okay.
Yeah. There are different types of NPAs, different gauges. You find them in green and brown and clear and so forth. But they're mostly essentially the same. Now, none of this kit. I mean, no one just when you became a cop, they didn't just say, "Hey, here's a pistol. Put it in that thing on your side and go forth and do good things." Did they? No. Well, they qualified you with it. And the same thing goes with everything we're talking about, tourniquets, airways, you know, the pressure dressings, all that stuff. You should be able to do it. Now, you say, oh, but we're already doing so much stuff. We already have, you know, sensitivity training and blah, 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 and so forth. Well, okay, block off some time to save your own life or your buddy's life. And that's, it's as simple as that. It's the guys that are like, well, you know, if I'm going to spend 16 hours, well, what's your life worth or what's your buddy's life worth? And you know, we talked a little bit off air, but we in the United States of America as law enforcement officers have to deal with horrific stuff. Okay. And it just happened up in Ohio at that high school, Chardon.
That's right.
And who's the first guys to show up? It's not the EMTs. The first guys to show up is you, bro. And you got a 15-year-old kid bleeding out, dying on the floor. And all you can do is hold his hand because you didn't go to a 16-hour class?
Well,
really?
Dude, and I'm with you. You know, we've had plenty of conversations about this, and I'm all about increasing our own capabilities. In fact, I'm making arrangements to go become an EMT at my own expense, on my own time this fall. And I'm not tooting my own horn. I just think we all ought to be able to do as much as we can. And I have the added benefit of my son, who's gotten into search and rescue stuff. He's going to become an EMT as well. But how many – I mean, I use myself as the example. I went to the police academy in 1986. I got first responder certified, which was CPR and advanced first aid. Yep. Not once since then did my police department send me or schedule me for any kind of first aid training. Now, I'm all about if the agency's not going to do it, we do it ourselves. But shouldn't we be banging on these administrators with baseball bats? Shouldn't we be pounding on the politicians? Shouldn't this be part of your every year update training that every cop in the country gets?
Well, you're absolutely right, Frank. It's based on you've got ignorance and you got apathy. You know, when I went through the academy,
those are the two primary characteristics required to become a chief of police, aren't they?
Well,
now that I've just pissed off every chief of police in the country, and like, folks, it was a joke, but apathy and what was the other one? Damn,
ignorance and apathy.
Ignorance and apathy. Well, I mean, they're killing us.
Well, what happens is, you know, everybody, you know, they sit in a room and they say, we've got to give these cops first aid training. And everybody nods their head and says, oh, it's a great idea. It's a great idea. What can we give them? Well, that's as far as they get. They're like, I don't know. Well, and someone raises their hand and says, hey, the Red Cross has got, you know, the advanced first aid and CPR class. And they're like, bam, that's it. Make every cop do advanced first aid and CPR. And that's fine. That's great. Advanced first aid and CPR is great. But you're not talking about the stuff that kills us in minutes. You're talking about treating burns and electrical shocks and so forth. You know, you're not talking about, all right, we just had a rollover car crash and half of my leg is laying over there in a ditch and there's a bunch of bright red blood pumping out of my leg. Okay, CPR is not going to help that. The Heimlich maneuver is not going to help that.
You're not being fair. CPR is going to help that bright red blood come out of that leg much faster.
Oh, exactly, exactly. You know, so, you know, and if I can teach an 18-year-old E1, okay, just fresh out of boot camp, getting ready to deploy overseas, if that kid can be taught how to save himself and his buddies, then every cop in the United States should be able to do it. You know, you can make life-saving, life-and-death decisions on a moment's notice, and you're expected to, as a police officer, you're expected to do it, you know, a lot, but you can't stop yourself or your buddy from bleeding to death. You know, that's unacceptable, and I'm sorry to throw extra things on you, but, you know, do you really want to be that guy who, you know, has to watch, like I said, you know, you got a 15-year-old kid who just was a victim of a lunatic shooter, and you're there with him, and he's bleeding to death, and all you can do is hold his hand and tell him the ambulance is on its way, the ambulance is on its way, and that's all you can do. We can do better. We can do better. And I'm not talking about, you know, not every patrolman needs to become an EMT. You know, and like I said, not every trooper who's going overseas is a corpsman or a medic.
Right.
But they, you know, they get enough, like I said, it's, you know, self-aid, buddy aid, professional aid. What can I do while I'm waiting for the ambulance to roll up, while I'm waiting for the EMT, the paramedic to get here? And, you know, the fact of the matter is, if you have a mass casualty event, you're going to have a couple of paramedics and a whole bunch of people bleeding. And if, at very least, you can stop the major bleeds, make sure that guy has an airway, you will save more people than you lose.
You know, I got to tell
if
you.
If they can be saved.
And forgive me for interrupting you, but I got to tell you, I went down after Virginia, the attack at Virginia Tech occurred, Sung Hee Cho killed all those people. I was very honored to go down there and talk to some of the folks that had responded, and everybody sung the praises of the two SWAT medics that were there because they saved so many lives after the after the building had been determined to be secure. You know, they saved lives. They did what they needed to do with their training, and there are students alive today because of that. Mm-hmm. And we forget about that. And people don't realize there was only 6 ambulances available there that day. Helicopters couldn't fly. You know, one kid rode a bus to the hospital with a gunshot wound in his foot. People don't realize how bad it can get, but we absolutely need to be able to save those lives. Now, in doing that, and we've got our 2-minute warning, in doing that, do we open ourselves to other liability, or do Good Samaritan laws cover us?
I am glad that you asked that, and I know that we don't want to get into it with less than 1 minute. But that is an excellent point. And you have to ask yourself while you're on the break is, I have the authority, or I've been granted the authority to make life and death decisions with that pistol, rifle, shotgun in my hand. I can do that, yes or no? Obviously,
yes.
If you're a cop, you got a badge, you have deadly force on your body all day long. And
yep.
You have to be able to make that decision. Now, can you make the decision to save someone's life?
Yes. Oh, absolutely, and we just got our 1-minute warning, but we will talk about this when we come back from the break. Absolutely, I can make the decision to save somebody's life. Here's the difference. The agency issued me the handgun and the bullets to use deadly force, and because I'm going to be very careful. They didn't give me that to take a life. They gave that to me to neutralize a threat and to use deadly force as necessary.
Right, rock on.
Most agencies today are not issuing tourniquets, pressure bandages, MPAs, blah, blah, blah. We're at our 30-second mark. When we come back, because we haven't talked about this yet, we've got to go over Student of the Gun, the book and the television show, and we've got to talk about the tension pneumothorax because I am completely ignorant of that, and I'm going to need you to educate me about that, all right?
Okay.
For our listeners, stay with us. We're with Mr. Paul Markle talking about Beyond the Band-Aid, what we can do to save some lives on the street, ours, our buddies, and the civilians we serve. Stay tuned.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. 152. The number of law enforcement fatalities in 2010. The numbers are too high. Any line of duty death is unacceptable. Join us in Washington, D.C. next year during National Police Week at the first ever Officer World Expo as we combine a unique training opportunity with the largest police memorial in the United States. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com for details and to join the mailing list, Officer World Expo, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Why do I feel so lousy? Why aren't my medications working? Why can't my doctor figure me out? These are just a few of the questions Dr. Kevin Connors will be exploring in Dr. Kevin Connors Live on TogiNet.com. The author of the book, Help My Body Is Killing Me, solving the connections of autoimmune disease to thyroid problems, fibromyalgia, depression, ADD, ADHD, and more. He'll dig into these and many other conditions to dissect the mechanisms of your problems. Giving God the glory and looking for answers to make you look and feel better, to make you feel whole again. For more on him, his book, and the show, check out upperroomwellness.com. Never be satisfied with a diagnosis. There is always a reason behind it. And if you can alter the mechanisms that led you down your current path, we can change your future. It's Dr. Kevin Connors, live here on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Good afternoon, folks. Welcome back to this last segment of today's Officer Radio Show. We're with Mr. Paul Markle talking about Beyond the Band-Aid and how we can save some lives, our own, our buddies, or the civilians that we serve. And in this case, protect and serve can mean something because you can actually save their life if you do it, like the two SWAT medics at Virginia Tech, using their training to save some lives. People had been shot, been injured. Before there could be enough ambulances on the scene, before they could get treated, transported and treated. And Paul, before we went to the break, you know, I mentioned that I forgot to mention this. And this is the other thing. People talk about, well, the ambulance is only 5 minutes away. You're going to bleed to death in 2 minutes. Here's the other kicker. I can't help but wonder, and I'm not being negative about any of our fire service people. I can't help but wonder how many people realize that the on-scene commander at Virginia Tech was a 23-year-old volunteer senior at Virginia Tech. When we depend on the ambulance, however my wife decides I'm going to say it today, I wonder how many people realize that the people coming on the ambulance might be a 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old kid who that's just what he does. He's volunteered to do this, and he might be the best at it in the world. But if you could save your own life, would you do that rather than putting it in the hands of somebody the age of your son? You know, it's my son, anybody's kid. You know what I'm saying? How many people really realize that?
Well, and you're absolutely right. And you know, a lot of guys say, well, yeah, but, you know, I can hear the guys out there in the audience are saying, oh, that's bull crap, Paul, because every time we do a SWAT call out, we have an ambulance standing by. Okay, great. And I guarantee you that their policy says they will not enter an active scene. If you got two shooters, one of them is shot and the other one hasn't yet been found, it is not a secure scene. And every ambulance company that I am aware of has in their policy will not enter active scene. Okay.
Right.
So you're bleeding to death. Your buddy's bleeding to death. You know, a victim is bleeding to death. And you're searching for a gun for shooter number two. The ambulance isn't coming, bro. They're two blocks away, and the moment you tell them scene secure, they'll be there. But until that time, they're not coming. It's part of their policy. You know, every agency or every area that I've worked in, you know, that was pretty much standard operating procedure. The EMTs and paramedics will not enter an active scene. And so you say, okay, you know, what do you do now? So you've got one lunatic running around that you haven't pinned down yet, and he's effectively causing the death of all these people that have been wounded. And before we go one step further, Frank, I want to, you know, I don't want to come off like some kind of an expert. I'm one of those guys that had the crappy training. You know, I was one of the guys that went through the training, and they're like, and when I went through the academy, they gave us the Red Cross, CPR, Heimlich maneuver, first aid, and they never taught us anything about how to address, you know, no one ever said you should carry a tourniquet on you. That's crazy talk. You know, and we used to be in the dark ages of the only use a tourniquet after all other means have failed and as a last resort and blah, 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 blah.
Now, but wait a minute. In all fairness, and we have to be fair about it, I did the same thing, okay? I went in the Army, for whoever wants to do the math to figure out how old I am, I went in the Army in 1982. And we were told never to put on a tourniquet except as a last resort because they assumed that whatever you put a tourniquet on, when you put the tourniquet on, you were as good as amputating it from that point down. We've learned better since then, but it takes a while for the information to be disseminated. And that's part of why we do what we do today on the radio show.
Exactly.
Tourniquets don't mean amputation.
No. The one thing that we haven't talked about is the pre-hospital trauma life support book. Okay. The PHTLS 6th edition is essentially the medical Bible for SOF medics right now. And the SOF medics, you know, in the book it says that they have had people up to 120 to 150 minutes with a tourniquet in place and have not lost their limbs. Okay, that's, you know, 150 minutes is a long daggum time. I think that you and I will both agree, Frank, that, you know, if you are, you know, shot in the United States of America, in 120 minutes, you're going to be in a hospital.
Yeah, that's 2 hours. For those of us who are so simple we can't do the math, it's 2 to 2.5 hours. Yeah. And even the longest one I'm aware of locally, we had a guy who was shot, and he was in the trauma room, in the trauma emergency room under the knife in 22 minutes.
And you say, wow, that's a long time. So the vascular surgeons that we have working on us today are fantastic. I mean, they are. They're the best that they ever have been. So, you know, I mean, if the crazy thing is people say, oh, but, you know, if you do that, then he'll lose his leg. Well, if I don't do it, he's going to die.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there is a trade-off to be had. Let's save the life.
Yeah. Let's save the life first. But the chances are really good if I save the life by using this tourniquet that they will save the limb if it can be saved.
Right. All right.
All right.
So let's talk about tension pneumothorax, because I understand what it is. I have no clue on how you would treat it.
Okay, it's what people like to call an open airway wound or a sucking chest wound. Basically, something has poked a hole in your chest cavity, and
right.
that stinks, and nobody likes that to happen. But
yeah, pink foam is ugly, right?
Yeah, exactly. Pink foam is not a good thing. But so you can cover that up. Now, but the problem is, you know, you use the dressing, you use the plastic wrap, you cover it up, but if there's a hole both in the lung and in the chest cavity, every time I take a breath in, what am I doing? I'm allowing air escapes out of that hole in the damaged lung. And
right.
so what happens is every time I take a breath, a little bit more air, a little bit more air, a little bit more air builds up in that chest cavity. Well, where's your heart? It's right in the center, right? So let's say my left lung has a hole in it. Now I'm patched up and I'm good to go. You know, the guy who's working on me, he patched up the hole on the outside. Well, no more air is going in from the outside. Rock on. But I still have to breathe, right?
Right.
Well, that dude's not going to crack my chest open and fix my lung on the street. But what can happen is air builds up in the chest cavity, and the air starts pushing against the heart. Heart don't like that. Too much air pressure, actually, you know, builds up. It pushes on the heart. I'm not a paramedic, but... And I'm not even a doctor, but if too much air pushes against that heart, that heart's going to defib. It's going to it's going to heart attack, and you're going to have a heart attack. It's going to push on your heart. So how do you relieve that tension? Basically, you take a big, sharp, nasty needle, and you put it in the top between ribs number one and ribs number two, and they teach you how to measure, you know, on a human being, and you push it in. If you hit rib, you go up over the rib, and you keep going. And you will relieve, and if you have a conscious patient, you'll notice immediately the relief that you're getting from the, you know, that letting that air escape. And the tension, because the tension pneumothorax, even if you did everything right, you tourniqueted, you bandaged, you did everything, that guy still got to breathe. And if
right.
all that air is building up in that chest cavity, it can kill him. And you can stop it, or you can relieve that pressure with that big, sharp, nasty needle.
Now, I'm not going to argue against it because, like I said, I'm not educated about this, and I look forward to getting more training. But what are the risks? You're talking about relatively high up on the chest,
mm-hmm.
just a little bit down from the clavicle, correct?
Right, yeah.
Okay, what are the chances that we're going to hit the brachial arteries up underneath of there someplace? What happens if you hit the top of the lung? I mean, what are the chances if we do this wrong, we make things – irreparably worse.
Exactly. Well, you need to be trained, and you need to be trained to the point that you know, like, okay, this guy right here, his trachea is being pushed over. You know, he's got a damaged left lung, and I can see his trachea, his throat is got tension. It's being pushed over to the right side. He's rasping for breath. It's like there's an elephant on his chest. This dude is about to die. He's about to expire, and you know, you're not doing it on the good lung side. You're doing it on the bad lung side. So
right.
if you poke the lung, yeah, it's not fun or anything, but that lung already has a big old hole in it from a bullet or a stab wound or something.
Right.
So, you know, okay, we'll fix the little tiny needle gauge hole, and we'll worry about that later. And the truth is the trauma surgeon actually is going to cut you open. He's going to make a bigger hole anyway, and he's going to put a tube in there. So,
right.
But if you're taught, you could do it. And like I said, Frank, if we can teach 18- and 19-year-old kids, people that you would refer to as kids, okay, these troopers are overseas right now. You know, we've asked these kids to go overseas and, you know, give up their lives. And if we can teach them to do it, there's no reason why a 26-year-old patrolman cannot learn to do it. And I'm not talking about 2-3 weeks. You know, the TCCC class that we teach to troopers before they go overseas is 3 days and a practical. That's 3 training days and a practical, you know, like a, you know, triage type moulage exam where we do a guy up as a patient, you know, and they have to come and save that guy's life. So, you know, can you give up 3 8-hour days or even 2 8-hour days? Spread it out over a weekend. And
right.
there's no, you know, people are like, oh, screw you, Paul. You just want me to do more work. Hey, bro, it's your life. Live it like you want. But the fact of the matter is I'm pretty sure most of the guys out there with badges raised their hand and said, I swear to support and defend and so forth and protect and serve. And
yeah, they didn't put their arm up and say, I swear to die.
Yeah. And, okay. You know, you've got a partner that you've been riding with for 12 years, and you're going to watch him bleed out on the street because you didn't want to go to the two-day weekend course because you didn't have time for it.
Right. Yeah. What is it? We're coming up on our 2 minutes, so we got other things to talk about. But there's that old thing about, you know, the cemetery's full of people who didn't have time to exercise. We don't ever want the cemetery to be full of people who are too busy to get trained. Yeah. That's our kicker. Okay. So I just got my 2 minute warning.
Training, Frank. Once you get the training, it's like the bonk on the head. You're like, man, this was not as hard as I imagined that it was.
Right. Right. All right. Now, wait a minute. The name of the book you said, you talk about the sixth edition, the pre-hospital.
Yeah, it's the PHTLS sixth edition.
PHTLS. Okay.
As in Paul, Hotel, Tom, Lincoln, Sierra, sixth edition.
There you go. In phonetics for Mr. Paul Markle. I love it. All right. Student of the Gun. The book is still out. Where's the best place, easiest place to get it?
The easiest place to get it is at your computer or your Kindle or your Nook or whatever. Student of the Gun, A Beginner Once, A Student for Life is available on BarnesandNoble.com or Smashwords.com, and you can get it for all of your digital formats, for your laptop, for your Kindle, for your Nook, for your iPad, whatever. But Student of the Gun is available online. Just Google it. And if you want to watch the show, Student of the Gun is on Sundays, Thursdays, and Mondays on the Sportsman's Channel.
Okay. Sundays, say it again, Sunday, Monday, and Thursday on the Sportsman
Channel. Sunday, Monday, and Thursday on the Sportsman Channel.
Cool. Paul, thank you very much for being on the show with us today. I think we're down. Yep, I'm getting my 30-second warning. This will be put up as a podcast, and I hope everybody listens to it. Real quick, do you have an email anybody can contact you with questions?
You can just go to paulmarkle.com.
That's PAULMARKEL.
K-E-L. That's
paulmarkle.com. Paul, thank you for being with us today. Listeners, thank you for being here. Take the information. Do something positive with it. Save your life. Save a buddy's life. Save a citizen's life. This is Officer Radio on Officer.com, and we appreciate you listening. Stay safe on the streets.
Thank you for being a part of Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Morelli. Each week, Officer Radio